is after the Kennedy visit.
Yeah, after the Kennedy visit. And the interesting thing was the press plane took off. That's what the Pan Am said, no sailing boy, it just took off. No problem whatsoever, just that thing. President's plane took off. And had all kinds of black smoke coming out the engines and stuff. Oh, Eberhard said, see, they've lost the fuel from the lowest bidder. If you remember Reese, he was just so funny.
Right.
He was so happy to get the president off the
platform. Oh, I bet he was. Oh, Reese was the wittiest, the cleverest of them all, wasn't he?
I found something you might want to look through unless you have it. Do you have this book of letters that they sent to him on his birthday?
No. Von Braun?
Yeah.
No.
This was on his 60th birthday.
Golly.
March 23rd. And,
I would love to.
Take a look through this. All right. Copy if you'd like.
Oh, great. I would love to do that. I'll guard it with my life and get it back to you then.
Yeah, Mary just ran a process the other day. And like I think the world, there may be some stories in here that tells a great deal. There were a number of stories. I was reading one out front with a Tigers rider was telling about being with him. And
is that right?
In California and drinking fine wine on Tigers magazine and this type of thing.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So that was on his 60th birthday. That would have been 72,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. March the 23rd.
Yeah. Gosh, no.
I can't get back to that.
I certainly will. I probably want to copy at least some of them.
Well, all the others.
I wasn't even aware of that. Oh, Chesley Bonestell,
The
artist.
Yeah. Some of the themes for Tigers magazine, some of the articles. I found Brown.
Oh yes, that's right.
The early Tigers day.
And then Fred Ordway proceeded to collect all those paintings to acquire them. And he has the greatest collection of Bonestell's. And he showed them. Some of them at the Space and Rocket Center a few years back, probably while you were away.
Yeah, great.
I think you understand where I'm coming from.
Uh-huh.
Certainly amusing, humorous anecdotes. In some cases, it'll show they may not be all that funny. They just may be pointed or vignettes that illustrate some aspect of his character or personality, but. Anyway, I appreciate your doing
that. Yeah, I don't know if you know it's and I don't have a great number of them, but,
Yes.
One thing I recall is that, I guess in the early 60s or so, I left 63, so it must have been early 60s. We were at an AIAA meeting in Dallas. I guess we gave a presentation on the Saturn Fair 1, probably Saturn 1B.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, Dr. Brown was taking some questions. And it's about the time, computers were really starting to come into being. And some man got up and asked Dr. Brown, what do you think about automation? And his response was, well, automation was much like having a wife. She helps you solve some of the problems you wouldn't have had if you hadn't gotten married in the first place. Silverstein. And they discussed discussion was which is the best vehicle, a Titan III, I believe being presented by the Air Force or one of the Saturns that we were working on. And we were out there for most of the day. Frank Williams and I were with back on mine. I think a few other guys, people were. He was going to give a briefing. And he'd been in a press conference before with the head of OPA. We were doing the work for OPA at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he got ready to give his briefing and didn't have his flight projector. And so, boy, we out walking real fast and I try to keep up with him. And the halls were filling out, and he finally said, "Where's my projector? Why do you think I brought you guys for along in the first place anyway?" That was sort of a humbling experience.
Right, yeah, well, that's good.
But I think it was the same time, I remember, about the same time they were thinking about going to NASA. And I remember after some meeting he had that day, he said, "Well, Bob, looks like we're going to the Air Force." Another
AWPA, that's Advanced
Research
Projects Agency.
A man named Johnson, who came from General Electric, I believe, and was head of the Fairfax. And they really started the set of the Juno series of vehicles, which went into the center for them. One of the vehicles they were working on was Juno 4. And we started working on a Juno 4, which had a Saturn 1 first stage and a stage with a Martin Company's Titan on the second stage.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big discussion about the guidance system. And the OPA people, a man named Jim something, I don't recall his name, but was pushing us to use the Centaur guidance, which was being built by Honeywell at that time. I think we were proposing a guidance based on Jupiter guidance or Redstone guidance, ST-130 platform or something. So we were having to give a briefing to General Ostrander, Don Ostrander, at that time, who was going to hear our recommendations on the guidance system. And that's why Brown was very concerned, because Walter Hausman kept saying, our guidance system. And finally he said, "Well, let's let Bob give the guidance system briefing." So he doesn't know enough about guidance to say our system anyway. So I gave a briefing to Ostrander on merits of the two guidance systems, and I don't recall what we had, but I think we had somehow we were using parts of their system or something. And finally I finished and Dr. Von Braun turned to General Ostrander and he said, "Well, General, what do you think?" Ostrander said, "Well, there's something in it for everybody, so you know, we thought funny thing was when he said, "We'll let Bob give it, he doesn't know enough about guidance to say that it's our system."
And that was Walter Hausman?
Yeah, Dr. Hausman.
Oh, I did.
He was with us down there.
Yes, and I have a note to give him a call, see if I can talk with him.
Another time we had been meeting in Washington. We were sitting in a bar up there someplace. After a meeting, we'd all.
And this was in Washington?
Yeah, I had a few drinks. And that time, Dr. Reese had to leave early for some reason. And we're in terms of watches. So, "Well, Eberhard, we'll just give you the whole bill since you have to leave." And he said, "Watch Reese's expression." Well, I guess Reese sort of, he was just kidding Reese. But Reese is going to have to pay the whole bill, and I guess Reese got over that money pretty tight. And really, I don't have a lot more humorous things, but the more things I remember talking about Davis. Well, one thing I wrote in that letter is that after the Shepherd loss, we were so cramped out, Lynn and I were sitting at the Polaris drinking martini about 11 o'clock in the morning. And Dr. Von Braun came in with Russ Kyle, who was, was in the airplane contract doctor, and sat down with us and chatted for a while. Oh, Alf Lynn finally said, Dr. Von Braun, you may not know me, but I work for you. And Dr. Von Braun said, yeah, and I said, I work for you too.
It
was a very, very interesting remark.
And what was his name, Alf?
Alf Lynn, and he's since passed away.
Is it Alf?
Alf.
Oh, Alf Flynn.
F-L-Y-N-N.
And he worked for whom?
He was working for me at the time, I think.
Okay.
He worked for NASA.
For NASA.
I don't really know exactly where he was working at the time.
But this was at Marshall Center.
Oh, we were down at Kennedy Center.
Oh, at that time.
We were in the bar at the Polaris.
But y'all worked for Marshall.
Yeah, we all worked for Marshall.
Right.
But I think the interesting thing is that there's just a few of us sitting around.
Oh,
Dr.
yeah.
Comes in, sits down with us.
Yeah.
As opposed to, he's very human, very warm
individual. Oh, right. And well, and he probably felt that, hey, I'm working for these guys.
Right.
Yeah.
He really did. He had a very fine habit, of always shaking your hand and thanking you. One time, when I first started working out there during the early Redstone days, I was working materials lab, and we were getting ready to launch, I think, the first Redstone. I believe it was the first Redstone. And it was late in the afternoon, 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I was coating the flame deflector for the Redstone with a nickel coating to protect it from the heat. And I was outside building 423 in a loading ramp. We didn't have too good facilities at that time. And he left his office up 420, 421, very late in the evening. And as he was driving out, he saw me and stopped and came over and thanked me for working so late.
Mm-hmm.
Get this done. It's very,
very
human thing. A couple other things I always remind him. He was always trying to find the right place for people in this organization. If people weren't really quite doing their job, he really never criticized them, this type of thing. He used to state, which I've used throughout my career, is he said there's a place in an organization for everyone. And as an example, he always said GE had its Steinmetz. And I guess it's not a typical corporate type individual, but he made great contributions to John Lefner. So those are just a few of the things I thought back from my 30 years.
Oh, yeah, very interesting and useful. But you say they always tried to work people in.
They always tried to get people in the right, and use their abilities in the right place, and not be concerned when they couldn't do everything. I think he always felt, which I continue to feel, that to put a person in a job and that he can't do it, it's not his problem, it's your problem. You should have been able to evaluate them and make that determination, because that's what you get paid for.
Right.
One other thing with the very human side is that when they had the movie, and they made that movie of him.
Yes, I Aim for the Stars.
Yeah. for some reason, he'd asked me to stay over. And he said, Bob, he said, I'm down to Hay Adams. And I think Columbia Pictures or whoever was made the movie. Come on down, we'll get you a free meal. He said, we might as well have dinner together on Hay Adams, on the Columbia.
Right.
And then I told him afterwards, I said, well, I have to go down to Woodward and Mocha. I said, I don't have a shirt tomorrow, so I need to go down and buy a new shirt. Well, he said, I'll walk down there with you. So it was interesting, he and I were walking down this side of that street, and on the other side of the street, we walked by the theater which had this movie going on. And here I am walking down the street with him. One night, the night previously, he was with the first lady, Mrs. Eisenhower, going to a movie. You know, it's sort of a kind of individual thing. So we walked down with her and loved it. And I bought a shirt, and then we walked back. And I wasn't staying Hay Adams, so I don't know where I was staying, but there's some other hotels up in that area.
So he went in with you too,
yeah,
while he bought the shirt, just to kind of hang out.
Right. And of course, I remember he talked about Chinese history or whatever. I don't know why that
is. That right?
Just shows the intent of his interest.
Everybody says he was the Renaissance man.
Yeah.
He kind of knew it all.
When I was a Thai call, everybody got excited about the gurus with quality circles and quality control and teams and all that type of thing. And my younger people who were all in these jobs, you know, promoting massage, really just didn't like that I didn't take the training.
Mm-hmm.
I told them I'd trained them as best there was.
Right.
With people like Bob Brown, Reese, and Madaris.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty strong company, isn't it? Did you ever, Von Braun, as everyone knows, came from an aristocratic family, and, you know, he was born, he was to the manor born. Did you ever, and that's not something he flaunted apparently at all in this country, did you ever see that nobility, if you will, manifested in any way that you thought in that context? Or?
No, the only way I would think it is the fact he's such a gracious individual and all his cares for people.
Mm-hmm.
Very human, the fact that, you know, probably came from very simple background. I really don't know. You know, I don't, sometimes you think of him, they'll be as haughty type of individuals, and I don't call him. I'm sure on occasion I do.
Right.
When he was a very strong individual at times when Juan came, and you were always very much impressed with him, and very generally very much impressed with him and his company.
And I'm sure some of that confidence was born of his upbringing and all of that.
Yeah.
Have you seen this Alabama Heritage magazine series? I've got the, and I was gonna, I meant before you come to go back. In the spring and in their summer issues, they ran this two-part series by Mike Wright, the Marshall Center historian.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very fine, slick, high-quality magazine, a quarterly, called the Alabama Heritage, and I can probably get you some original copies of it if you'd like.
Yeah,
and I was about to, I couldn't recall, I think you're quoted in there folks, including Schwinghammer in here, although I don't confuse the two of you. Stuhlinger is widely quoted in it. Chuck Lundquist. But Mike has done an excellent job. He did some original interviewing, I think, for this piece. But Jay Foster, Bob Schwinghammer, I think he talked to them himself, and in other cases, and Jim Odom. Other cases, he just referred to existing interviews.
Yeah, I met him just before the 63. That's about the time they were starting to certify.
You
go back to about 71.
I was going to ask you, you came to Redstone when?
In 1951 as a GI.
Okay. And of course, that was a famous group of GIs.
Yeah.
A lot of them with scientific and engineering degrees.
Yeah.
And that was your case. You
had an engineering degree in ceramics. I'd worked for a tile company in Ohio before I was drafted. And at that time, the Army was working towards a 500-mile ballistic missile called the URSA.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a reentry problem, so they looked for engineers with materials background.
Sure. From which this ablative technology came from.
I think really we initiated the ablative technology out here.
That's what I recall.
And really wasn't our idea. Some ideas that there were two things which I think sort of were the genesis of this. One is the Germans used wood, considered wood during the V2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we had we were testing jet planes for the Redstone out of White Sands. And the North American Aviation, that time at Downey, was building the Navajo missile. And they had a man, had their materials named Jim Castle Franklin. And they were using reinforced plastic jet planes. Because the Navajo only required about 20 seconds of rocket propulsion or control. So we started that type of thing. And Jim Kingsbury and I, we bought a block of Westinghouse Micarta, about 3 inches thick, machined a jet vane out of it, put 3 or 4 thermocouples in it, put in a Redstone engine at White Sands, which was probably the first test of ablative. We got an ablation rate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That must have been 53, 54, 52, 53, or something like that.
On a flight?
Right. No, this was just in a static test.
Static, okay.
Yeah. And subsequently, we built a nose cone. Again, out of Westinghouse materials that went downrange, and re-entered, and it was on Eisenhower. Finally showed on TV after the Russians started.
Mm-hmm. Right.
An interesting thing that Dr. Bill Rival, who left here and went to GE and lives in Bethesda, has had, I guess, a few years ago, wrote a letter to the Smithsonian, and the Smithsonian gives all the credit for ablation to the Air Force and to APCO and GE.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a paper for the Smithsonian, really saying it was really the Army that promoted this in the missile. Didn't get much response, and his daughter sent it to the congressman in that district, who sent it to the Army through channels and this type of thing.
R-E-I-T?
R-E-I-T.
R-E-I-T. Not a German.
Yeah,
it's all over the world.
Huh. And he headed the Zion organization out here. I don't know exactly when Bill left. He must have left 56, 57 or something like that.
Right. When did you stop being a GI?
I guess 53.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you...
I came back to Savannah in January 53, I think.
Okay. Now, this Dr. Rob, did you say?
Dr. Rival.
Oh, right. In 85.
Yeah.
And Yeah. Oh, well, now Marshall was created in July of 60. And Eisenhower came down on September 1st of 60 to do the dedication.
Yeah.
Unless my memory, which often fails me, is failing me. Oh, I guess NASA was created in 58
yeah.
or so, wasn't it? 58
yeah.
or 59?
Yeah, I thought we were, you know, we were part of the ones that really went to at that time. Part of the accident was that we went with them along with JPL.
Okay. I do think that was July 1 of 60. Best I can recall.
Good. Yeah, I don't know exactly.
It's amazing. We talk about the GIs here. I think Chuck Lundquist was one of those, wasn't he? And there were a bunch.
Jim Hess, Jim Kingsbury.
Okay. I'll get you a copy of this, or see if I can get the magazine to send me some extra copies. He talks about Jay Foster was one of the
yeah, I think he came a little bit later. He wasn't in the original group. I think Jay came in the mid-50s or something.
Okay. Yeah, sounds reasonable. I don't know about where the
band was. Well, he was a military officer, got assigned down here.
Now, he was already in Washington, wasn't he, when
yeah,
that
happened, yeah. And that
was great. I say he'd been in there
all
years,
all of their address up to him up in Washington.
Okay. Was he with Fairchild by then or still with NASA?
He was still with NASA, I believe, at that time.
When you say, I'm switching back. You came here in connection with some rocket project called URSA. Is that like as in the constellation?
I believe
URSA?
It was a 500-mile range ballistic missile that the Army was interested in, and then I think Charlie Wilson killed it about short of about after I got here. And they started working on the Redstone. Man.
And it was a 500-mile range?
Yeah. And of course then matter of inches, we had a live horse there in Florida at one time. JPL had made, and they were Grand Central Rockets, was making all of those rockets. And we heard through some channels that the Inspector General was gonna, you know, check into that. If my memory doesn't fail me, either we or JPL leased a plane from Riddle Airlines, who at that time was doing, and flew that thing back to California.
Oh, is that right? Oh, upon orders of the IG?
No, I think the IG didn't want him to know it.
Oh, okay.
Somebody's orders, probably, I don't know.
Didn't want him to find it.
No, find it. Probably Medeiros' orders, you know.
And then I'm saying there was an explicit order from the White House or whomever, do not launch a live force stage.
Course we have on in Florida.
That's something. Of course,